Good afternoon. My name is Gloria Lariva. I'm coordinator of the National Committee to Free the Cuban Five. We're here today at the National Press Club in Washington, D.C., along with Mara Verheyden-Hilliard of the Partnership for Civil Justice, Haida Boghossian of the National Lawyers Guild, and Brian Becker of the Answer Coalition, to present evidence of the U.S. government's misconduct in relation to the Cuban Five and violation of the law banning domestic propaganda. After our presentations, we will have a question and answer period. I will present first. For the first time today, we are revealing the payments made to the Miami journalists by the Office of Cuba Broadcasting and the Broadcasting Board of Governors through Radio and TV Martí during the time of the Cuban Five's detention and trial. The dates of these payments, which we're presenting, are from November 1999 to December 31st, 2001. We are also presenting today the articles written during that time period while the Cuban Five were in Miami, in detention, or on trial, as well as community, as well as commentary by the government-paid journalists. What makes a secret payment so egregious is that they were made by the same government that was prosecuting the five Cubans. It is widely known that Radio and TV Martí are government propaganda, and their purpose is to try to influence the Cuban population against the Cuban government. It is also a thoroughly documented fact that hardly anyone in Cuba sees TV Martí or hears Radio Martí. The largest audience by far of the U.S. State Department's propaganda is right inside the United States, in Miami, Florida, through means of the government-paid journalists. So for U.S. journalists to pose as independent but to receive payment from the government agency that transmits U.S. propaganda, it in effect assures that this highly inflammatory U.S. propaganda is illegally communicated to the very audience from which the jury for the Cuban Five trial was picked. Thus, the Cuban Five were denied the most elemental right to due process in court. What we're disseminating today is a segment of the extremely prejudicial coverage that the Miami population was subjected to, including months before the trial began. There remains much more to be uncovered, which we will divulge as we obtain the information. Mara Verheyden-Hilliard will detail more about our ongoing lawsuit and our second FOIA to obtain more information, but I'd like to review just some of this highly prejudicial and false coverage. Wilfredo Cancio Isla was a reporter for El Nuevo Herald, the newspaper with the highest Spanish language distribution in Miami. He received $4,725 from September 30th, 2000 to December 3rd, 2001, part of the period of the prosecution of the five. One article in that period was published the very day that the jury began its deliberations at the conclusion of the trial. Keep in mind that the jury was not sequestered. The jurors went home every day of the seven-month trial, and before the jury was selected, the future members of the jury, as part of the larger Miami community, were subjected to 26 months of inflammatory coverage about the Cuban Five, against the Cuban Five. So on June 4th, 2001, the very day that the jury began its deliberation, on the question of guilt or innocence, Wilfredo Cancio Isla appeared in El Nuevo Herald with the headline, "Cuba Used Hallucinogens to Train Its Spies." This article claims from an unnamed source, a supposed Cuban spy defector, that Cuba gives its spies LSD or other hallucinogens in order to train them for missions abroad. This claim is completely unsubstantiated, but that is not the real point of the story. The objective of the article is to taint the five. In a very clever distortion, Wilfredo Cancio manages to link the five to this outrageous charge by quoting this anonymous man who goes by either Alex or Jose, who says, "I can assure you that the WASP network is just a part of the espionage work that was conceived to infiltrate the United States on a long-term basis. As if to imply, by mentioning the five in an article about hallucinogens, that the five were given drugs to control their minds. This supposed news article had no evidence, just outrageous lies. Yet Wilfredo Cancio received government money. He also wrote an article that appeared in the same paper on April 19, 2001, in which a discussion between the judge, prosecution, and defense took place with the jury removed from the courtroom. The defense team had requested permission from the judge to return for a second trip to Cuba to take testimony from additional witnesses. The prosecution complained about this defense request, and in a statement that would not have been allowed in a courtroom with a jury present, the prosecution said, "Cuba is constructing a fabricated version of the facts." The jury may not have been present, but the article and headline, which said, "The prosecution fears Cuban control in spy trial," it was available for all to see, including the jury, in El Nuevo Herald, written by government-paid Wilfredo Cancio. Ariel Ramos, who writes for Diario Las Americas, covertly received $11,700 during the period of November 1, 1999 to December 12, 2001, the period of the Cuban Five's prosecution. He wrote extensively calling for Cuban President Fidel Castro's arrest for the plane shootdown which took place in 1996. And I mention the plane shootdown because Gerardo Hernandez was wrongly accused and convicted of conspiracy to commit murder in the event of the plane shootdown, and that is why he is serving double life. But the part we will concern ourselves with today is in the documented period of Ariel Ramos's payments, where he wrote biased and hostile articles, interviewing only members of the exiled Cuban community who have a long-standing enmity with the Cuban leadership. On the U.S. payroll, he published in the U.S. press the demand for prosecuting Fidel Castro. And in one article, he also condemned Gerardo Hernandez, whom the government was prosecuting. He refers to the charge against Hernandez and then says that the chain of command begins with Fidel Castro. This theme was a steady beat of hysteria from 1996 all the way through the conviction of the five. Ariel Ramos never disclosed that he was being paid by the U.S., and it was a theme that was repeated continuously by the next writer, Pablo Alfonso. Pablo Alfonso received $58,600 from November 1, 1999 to December 31, 2001 during the prosecution of the five. He wrote quite a few prejudicial articles immediately after the five's arrest in 1998 through 2001, which you can see from the documents we have here at the Press Club and on our website, freethefive.org. Focusing on the documented period of payments, he gives a voice to the right-wing Miami Congress members who led a campaign to demand Fidel Castro's arrest and indictment for the plane shootdown without disclosing covert payments from the U.S. government. Enrique Encinosa is news director of Radio Mambí, as it's called in Miami, or WAQI by its call letters. It's one of the most biased and vitriolic radio stations whose commentators have been known to openly welcome violence against people in Miami who advocate normalization of relations between the U.S. and Cuba. Encinosa received secretly at least $5,200 during the period of the Five's prosecution, at the same time that he was a public commentator on the station. He has a long terrorist past, and he has used the Miami and international airwaves to call for terrorist acts against the people of Cuba. Thus, the U.S. government was not only directly influencing the outcome of the Cuban Five's case by paying Encinosa, Washington knowingly financed a terrorist. And you will see in the documentation quotes from him in endorsing the hotel bombings that took place in Havana in 1997, among other acts. Helen Ferré received $1,125 from February 21, 2001 to December 13, 2001, the period of the prosecution, again, of the five. She is editor of the opinion page of Diario Las Americas, which published Ariel Ramos and other biased articles against the five, including an article by the notorious terrorist Orlando Bosch, who carries a veiled threat against at least one of the defense attorneys. The Cuban Five, Gerardo Hernandez, Ramon Lavagnino, Antonio Guerrero, Fernando Gonzalez, and Rene Gonzalez, were irreparably harmed by the sea of prejudice generated by the Miami media. The government's role in financing much of this vitriolic media coverage means that the government has the obligation to immediately remedy this wrong. The Cuban Five must be freed. We will hear now from Mara Verheyden-Hilliard, who is co-founder and attorney with the Partnership for Civil Justice, which is responsible for the lawsuits underway for us to get more information from the government.
Good afternoon. I'm Mara Verheyden-Hilliard, co-founder and attorney with the Partnership for Civil Justice. And I, along with my colleagues at the PCJF, with Carl Massinio, Radhika Miller, have filed litigation in federal court in the District of Columbia demanding that the government release the records underlying this covert operation in which journalists in Miami who presented themselves as being ostensibly independent were receiving cash from the U.S. government at the same time that they were publishing incendiary and hostile articles about Cuba and the Cuban Five. The U.S. government simultaneously paying journalists who did not disclose they were on the U.S. government payroll, and at the same time, that same U.S. government was prosecuting the Cuban Five in a Miami court in a very politically charged and high-profile prosecution. The U.S. government paying supposedly independent journalists who didn't disclose the government affiliations and who are publishing stories rife with incendiary information during this trial compromises the fundamental right to a fair trial, the fundamental constitutional right that every defendant in the United States has to a fair trial. And it is time for the Justice Department to take action to remedy the wrongs that have been caused. It is time to free the Cuban Five, because this is conduct that cannot be allowed to stand. And moreover, this is conduct by the Broadcasting Board of Governors through its Office of Cuban Broadcasting that violates domestic law in the United States, that violates the Smith-Mundt Act, under which the U.S. government may not seek to propagandize the domestic population of the United States. The U.S. government is barred by law from spending money to try and influence domestic opinion through these propaganda activities. Yet here you have the Office of Cuban Broadcasting, the Broadcasting Board of Governors, getting tens of millions of dollars every year in a massive funding stream that goes into Miami that is paying journalists who say they're independent, who work for many outlets that say they're independent, who never disclose in their articles and their bylines that they're getting cash from the U.S. government. And when we tried to get the records, when we have gone into court to demand these records and filed demands, the National Committee to Free the Cuban Five has filed the demands for these records, we have filed federal litigation, they will not turn them over. Why are they withholding the contracts? Withholding the contracts makes it clear that the government is now engaged in a cover-up of these operations that are being exposed. We demand today that the Cuban Five be freed, and we demand today that the government immediately release the information, the contracts that show the payments and the services that were going to U.S. media during this period and since that period. And I note since that period, because while the focus today is very much on this period of payment during the prosecution of the Cuban Five, the little information that we have been able to get out so far shows that, in fact, these payments are continuing at least until 2008, which means the BBG appears to be continuing its violations of law against trying to propagandize the domestic public. It's time for these illegal operations to end. It is time for there to be full exposure of these operations. It is time to end these covert operations. Thank you.
We will now hear from Heidi Boghossian, who is Executive Director of the National Lawyers Guild.
Thank you. Thank you. I'm Heidi Boghossian. I'm Executive Director of the National Lawyers Guild. We have filed several amicus briefs in the case of the Cuban Five since the trial began, and we have conducted public education programs to educate the public about the many constitutional violations that have occurred throughout this case. The National Lawyers Guild has defended cases of political significance involving government misconduct since 1937. We have often been the first organization in the legal profession to advocate for fair treatment of government-targeted clients during periods when fundamental guarantees provided by our Constitution have not been respected. The trial of the Cuban Five is one of the most wrenching of these cases. It displays blatant violations of the U.S. Information and Educational Exchange Act of 1948, or the Smith-Mundt Act. For decades, this law has served as a much-needed firewall between government propaganda and the United States public. The timing of the paid-for journalism suggests a concerted plan existed to taint the judicial proceedings and to tilt the outcome of the trial toward guilty verdicts, depriving the defendants of our cherished Sixth Amendment right to a fair trial by an impartial jury. There can be no doubt that misleading and disparaging articles written by reporters paid by the government had a direct impact on public opinion, on the trial court, and on the full 11th Circuit Court of Appeals in the case of the Five. In paying reporters to deviate from well-established journalistic principles of fairness and accuracy, the government became an accomplice in jury tampering. In the case of the Five, before the trial started, an aggressive propaganda campaign was launched, accusing them of espionage. The campaign worked. The 11th Circuit three-judge panel cited the legal standard of, quote, inflammatory, prejudicial pretrial publicity that so pervades or saturates the community as to render virtually impossible a fair trial. In its 2005 reversal of the trial court's decision, that three-judge panel noted that this publicity, combined with other factors, created what they called a perfect storm that precluded the possibility of a fair trial. This publicity included a campaign to control the mass media by literally paying for media coverage. Beyond the moral travesty of this campaign is its patent illegality. The government is prohibited by law from running covert propaganda operations designed to support the administration's anti-Cuba policies without identifying them as propaganda. Government-subsidized stories hasten incalculable damage to our democratic process.
We will hear now from Brian Becker, who is National Director of the ANSWER Coalition, Act Now to Stop War and End Racism.
Thank you very much. The case of the Cuban Five is about to enter a new stage. Thanks to the painstaking research of the National Committee to Free the Five, Gloria LaRiva, and the other members of her staff that have brought to light this information that journalists purportedly to be independent were in fact on the government payroll illegally in a domestic covert operation whose target was the American people, a covert operation targeting the American people in violation of the law, and because of the legal work of the Partnership for Civil Justice Fund, which filed the FOIA on behalf of the National Committee to Free the Five, and the lawsuit demanding that the government stop withholding these documents, and because of the support of organizations like the National Lawyers Guild and what we believe will be a broad range of human rights organizations and legal organizations, the case of the Cuban Five will enter a new stage. Why? Because in addition to the millions of people who already support the case of the Cuban Five, the case to free them, there will be millions more now who, not knowing that much about the detail of the case of the Cuban Five, do know one thing, that the American people are, according to the Sixth Amendment, guaranteed the right to a fair trial. And the government of the United States, because it had as its goal the conviction of these five men, violated the Sixth Amendment in their case in an egregious way. And if they can do it to these five individuals, they can do it to anyone. You can't have a Sixth Amendment to the U.S. Constitution that applies to some and not to others and still pretend that you're a government that believes in the rule of law. And so the Answer Coalition, along with these other organizations, is initiating a campaign that will begin today that goes along with the FOIA request and the lawsuit, and it asks the American people to sign a letter directed to U.S. Attorney General Eric Holder, demanding that he, with the power granted him and the executive branch of the government, take action immediately to provide remedy and relief for these five individuals who were convicted because they were deprived of the right to a fair trial as a consequence of this covert operation, paying journalists to pretend to be actual journalists instead of paid propagandists for the prosecution. Millions of Americans will sign or support this campaign because they believe that everyone has a right to a fair trial. The letter says to Attorney General Eric Holder, "I call on you to take immediate action to provide remedy and relief to free the Cuban Five who were convicted and sentenced in Miami, Florida by a jury that was corrupted by extreme government misconduct that included the placement of hostile and prejudicial news stories against Cuba and the five defendants in the same Florida mass media by journalists who were secretly on the payroll of the same U.S. government that brought these men to trial." That's the letter, very short. We will begin circulating it. As I said, we believe that many, many organizations of a broad range of interest in America will also sponsor this letter. And in the coming weeks, tens of thousands of people will make the call to Eric Holder, take action. And they have many available options to take action to provide remedy and relief for people who are convicted based on government and prosecutorial misconduct. Thank you.
Thank you to the speakers. We will now begin the question and answer period. We have members of the press on telephone press conference as well as here present at the press club.
With regard to the demand to the Justice Department and Attorney General Eric Holder, we are not the attorneys for the Cuban Five. The Cuban Five have attorneys who are fighting for justice for those men. What we are doing is seeking to reveal to the public and allow the public to see, as the American public is entitled to see, its operations, the operations of its government, of the government of the United States. And in the information that we've been able to obtain so far, as discussed, it shows that the U.S. government is engaged in an illegal domestic propaganda operation that has paid journalists who, during the trial of the Cuban Five and before and beyond, have written false and incendiary stories about the Cuban Five, but during this period absolutely would have tainted the sitting jury as well as the jury pool. So our demand is a demand coming from the people of the United States. From the people of the United States who are standing up and saying, we will not tolerate being lied to. We will not tolerate seeing the Sixth Amendment shredded. We will not have the government of this country lie to us and put articles in our newspapers by reporters that are getting cash from the government and aren't even saying so. And that is the demand that's coming out now, is that based on this misconduct, based on the fact that the U.S. government was writing checks to journalists who were writing false and incendiary articles about the Cuban Five during the prosecution of the Cuban Five, that is misconduct sufficient that the government must take action. They have many remedies available to them. Eric Holder could decide that they should commute the sentences, that they could grant clemency, that they can vacate the convictions. They have a range of options. At the end of the day, what has to happen is the Cuban Five must be freed because their prosecution and their conviction was not in support of the constitutional rights that they have. Well, that's an interesting question, because here's the thing. We asked for the contracts. We've been able to obtain a limited amount of information that shows names of journalists and cash received by those journalists, but there are contracts for services, contracts for support. Although, realistically, would we expect that the U.S. government would write, dear sir, we're writing you a contract for you to illegally propagandize the domestic public? I don't think so. I think what they do, they pay people, people write articles, people have interest in writing articles, they receive cash, and at no point they disclose they're on the payroll of the U.S. government. In any journalist in the United States that's doing this, anyone in this room is a journalist in the United States that is an independent journalist in the United States. If you're receiving cash from the U.S. government to write articles, you think you'd need to say so. I mean, that you may recall the issue with Armstrong Williams some years ago when he was receiving money from the U.S. government to put on little documentaries or videos in support of the Bush administration's No Child Left Behind Act, but hadn't disclosed it. That was a violation of domestic propaganda law, just as these are violations of domestic propaganda law. The government is barred by the Smith-Mundt Act, the BBG included, from not only broadcasting in the United States, which they do, which BBG, probably its largest recipient for radio and TV Marti, is the United States population, not the Cuban population. But on top of that, they're barred from spending money to influence U.S. public opinion. That's through the Smith-Mundt Act, also as amended in 1972 and 1985. The Office of Cuba Broadcasting is an arm of the U.S. government. When the Office of Cuba Broadcasting writes a check, it's the U.S. government writing a check. So in fact, when the Office of Cuba Broadcasting and the BBG write checks, they are the U.S. government, it's the U.S. Treasury, it's the U.S. government making the payment. And the contracts, the underlying contracts that we've demanded, the BBG is refusing to produce. And they have offered no exemption, no basis under the Freedom of Information Act. They've tagged nothing and presented no basis in court or otherwise why they wouldn't produce them. They're simply stonewalling and withholding and refusing to turn them over. And they admitted in a filing as recently as March that they in fact have many of the contracts that we want in their hands, on their desks, and they simply don't want them subject to public scrutiny. The question is whether or not they were additionally providing services to radio or TV Marti. They may or may not be additionally providing services to radio and TV Marti, but if you are a journalist in the U.S., it's not as if it was an anchor for TV Marti or Radio Marti or someone whose full-time job was for those stations. These are journalists who every day go to work and publish in the Miami media, in print, and in broadcast without disclosing that they are receiving money from the U.S. government. That's the key issue here. It's not that it's an anchor or someone that says, you know, I'm a reporter for TV Marti. It's that people pick up their newspapers, they turn on the television, they're given news. And they have an expectation that the news they're given, at least minimally, is not being given to them by journalists who are receiving cash from the U.S. government. And when that happens, that's why it's against the law to do it. When that happens, it needs to be disclosed and not further withheld.
You see, not every Miami journalist is paid by the U.S. government. These are particular journalists who are Cuban, of Cuban origin, either born in Cuba or Cuban Americans, who lend themselves very willingly to propagandize against Cuba, but the audience is in the United States. It's been documented that hardly anybody listens or hears those two stations. The purpose is the payment for them, while they are receiving payment, as Mara said, is to transmit into Miami. And it's very interesting. There have been hearings in Congress about radio and TV Marti. And what has been noted is that it is the only U.S. propaganda station or broadcaster agency, like Radio Free Europe, Radio Free Asia. It's the only one that operates outside of Washington, D.C. Its base is in Miami. And its operations was moved to Miami in 1996. Now, because of so much scandal and the exposition that it's purely one-sided propaganda, there's some discussion in Congress of moving it back to Washington, D.C. That's only one part of this thoroughly corrupt and hostile media that has affected the trial of the Cuban Five. We're saying it has no business operating at all. And here today we are presenting the egregious nature of its coverage and paying these journalists to affect the Cuban Five trial. You will note in your notebooks that we've presented and what's online that we have also shown the articles that these journalists, Alfonso Ramos and Wilfredo Cancio, that they wrote many articles from the very days of the arrest in September 98 up until November 1999 that are not documented as paid. But that is why we're looking for more information on the FOIA. And the only reason that the payments, that we're able to present payments beginning in November 1999 is that is the only information that the Office of Cuba Broadcasting will give us. I'm certain that the payments go earlier than that. And that's the point of our struggle as well and the lawsuit.
Excuse me. The question was, is there any legal recourse in terms of a case for jury tampering? And I would leave that to the legal team, but I know they're extremely interested in this development. And I would imagine that they would bring this up as a cause for, at the very least, a new trial. Sorry.
We have a question from Via Mohammed with WPFW-FM Washington. Please go ahead.
That's Askia Mohammed with WPFW Radio. How was the Partnership for Civil Justice able to discover these payments, and how was it kept from the public for so long if it goes back more than 20 years?
This is Mara Verheyden Hilliard responding to that question, and I'll let Gloria respond to some of it. The FOIA demand that was made by the National Committee to Free the Cuban Five was made in January 2009. And they submitted lists of journalist names to the Broadcasting Board of Governors to find out which journalists were receiving money from the U.S. government that had not been disclosed and that appeared to be covert payments. They received a positive hit on multiple names, and initial information that was received shows names, amounts, contract numbers, so we know their formal contracts, and some dates. And because we have that information, we sought the underlying contracts. The BBG is refusing to provide the underlying contracts, which indicates very plainly to us that it's engaged in a cover-up, because why would you not make this information available? And as I said before, they've offered no formal legal exemption under the FOIA for withholding. They're just not handing it over. So that's raising very serious questions as to what the underlying information shows and has, but even the information that's been obtained shows journalists receiving money, journalists who've never disclosed that they were on the payroll, and the fact that the government was paying journalists who were writing incendiary stories during the time of the prosecution.
When we made our first request in January 23rd, 2009, 18 months ago, we gave a broad request of anybody who received payment from the OCB and the BBG. But they responded by saying, you need to narrow it down so we can begin. And therefore, we submitted 33 names of journalists, an initial call. 17 names came back positive. Actually, about 14 of them were journalists. Three others were people who received money from the OCB. We submitted a second FOIA in January 2010, a year later, with about 45 names of journalists, because they will not disclose a broader search. So we based it on many of these incendiary articles in the press in Miami and also the TV coverage. We're waiting for that information, and as it comes, we will reveal it. But we believe it's far more extensive, those who are receiving. There's a lot of documentation in the reports to Congress of dozens of journalists in Miami who receive payment from the OCB and BBG. By the way, there's an interesting fact. In 2006, some of you may recall, Radio Mambí, of which Enrique Encinosa is news director, made a contract that was also undisclosed. It was secret, in which their job was, for about $430,000, was to broadcast Radio Martí news from their station in Miami, which would have had the U.S. and Southern Florida as the audience. And it operated for a while until that scandal was revealed. So this is not some innocent kind of needing to have journalists fill their ranks. It's a long-term operation.
Hi, this is Margarita Alarcón from Cuba Debate in Havana. And I would like to ask a question to whomever on the panel could answer it or is interested in answering it. My question at this point is basically more centered on the why. Why this cover-up? Why are they so insistent in the United States to cover this whole incident up? Does it have to do with the Elian case? Does it have to do with Cuba-U.S. relations? Does it have to do with Posada Carriles? Does it have to do with the aggressive politics that the United States government has had against Cuba since the triumph of the Cuban Revolution in 1959? Why? I think that's one of the main things that the U.S. public needs to understand. Why this animosity?
This is Brian Becker from the Answer Coalition. I'll just respond briefly to that. If you trace back what the Cuban Five were doing in the United States, they had come to surveil organizations that were engaged in anti-Cuba activity, including terrorist activity, much of which had been funded, in fact, by the Central Intelligence Agency for many decades. And as they uncovered reports and reported that terrorist activity was about to be undertaken against Cuba, as indeed it was in the late 1990s, and reported that information to the U.S. government, instead of the U.S. government and the FBI taking measures to apprehend those who were conspiring to commit terrorist acts against the Cuban people, people who had been long adversaries of Cuba, the five themselves were arrested. And since that time, those who have been exposing the engaged terrorist activities of those in Miami have themselves been demonized. And they were demonized before their trial, and they were demonized during their trial, and the trial was held in Miami, of course. And at the end, the jury that was subjected to this demonizing propaganda found them guilty. And now we are learning, as layer after layer of what amounts to a vast operation by the U.S. government is uncovered, we see that the United States government, I think partly to cover its own tracks, partly to continue the ongoing animosity against Cuba, has not only sought to prosecute and convict the Cuban Five, but went to extraordinary lengths of engaging in illegal, covert, domestic propaganda to ensure their conviction. And thus, at the time of their trial, and at the time this unsequestered jury was to deliberate on their guilt or innocence, journalists who were on the payroll of the same government that was prosecuting them for having tried to expose terrorism was planting stories that could only make the jury corrupted, only make the jury the victim of a prejudicial outlook at the time that they were deciding on guilt and innocence. So we see a concerted, long-standing effort that has culminated in this. But what's new here, and this is what I think we're trying to emphasize, is that we have the names of the journalists. We have the numbers of the contracts. We have the amounts that they were paid. We know that the time that they published these articles hostile to the Cuban Five coincided with the jury, while the jury was deliberating. And thus, we are contending, at least we in the Answer Coalition, that the jury pool was corrupted in what amounted to a grand scale of jury tampering, and thus violated their Sixth Amendment right to a fair trial. And what's new is that we know these facts to be true, but we also have, because of its refusal to answer the FOIAs and respond yet properly to the lawsuit, that the government refuses to provide the information. You asked, is there a smoking gun? Well, if there's not a smoking gun, why doesn't the government come forward and release these documents, which they acknowledge that they have? What is it that they're hiding? And we believe that given the whole vast scope of the evidence, we believe that we will demonstrate, and we have demonstrated by this information, and those documents would further demonstrate that, in fact, the Sixth Amendment right of the Cuban Five was systematically violated. Now, because we're optimistic people, and because we believe that the American people and the struggle for justice can make an impact, we've initiated not only a legal proceeding after the refusal of the government to hand over the documents that they're required to hand over in the FOIA, or to withhold the documents. We're appealing to the American people to join in this campaign to demand that the Attorney General, Eric Holder, right this wrong by providing remedy and relief to the Cuban Five. And as Mara stated, the government has many options and has utilized many options in the past in different cases. The government can provide clemency, it can commute sentences, it can ask a court to vacate a conviction based on prosecutorial or government misconduct. It has a wider range of options. We're not suggesting to the government which one they utilize, but we're demanding that given the evidence that we have disclosed here today, that has been revealed today, that the government must act unless it will allow that the United States government doesn't engage in a rule of law, doesn't live according to the same rules that they tell the rest of the world that it should abide by. And so the thing that's new is this revelation. We're going to make a big campaign, a nationwide campaign, to force the government to reveal these documents, to stop withholding, and to set the Cuban Five free as they must.
Well, right, but the 2006 FOIA that reveals some of this evidence of payment of the journalists was payments after from 2001 on. Ours is during the time of the prosecution and detention of the five. This is what is so important about our revelation, is that is the coverage that was harmful to the five. And the other is that, here's a very important point. It's not just a question of the jury tampering, although that's absolutely significant. Imagine if during the trial's beginning, when the defense was seeking a change of venue, if this fact of government-paid journalists who had been covering for 26 months before the trial, hostile coverage, imagine if the defense had known, does anyone really believe that the trial would have taken place in Miami, or even taken place? That would have been grounds, I think, and I'm just a layperson, that would have been grounds for complete mistrial before the trial even began. And the question from Cuba Debate is an important one. Miami is unlike any other city. Only in Miami can a terrorist like Luis Posada Carriles, which the world knows has killed 73 people in a plane, among other crimes, walks the streets free in Miami, and the men who never had a weapon, who only had their eyes and ears to report on terrorism and stop it, are in prison serving up to double life. And that's why this coverage in Miami is so critical to the case of fighting for their justice.
Yo iba a leer de mi discurso. Hoy estamos divulgando la información de los pagos secretos entre el periodo de noviembre 1999 hasta el fin de diciembre 2001, en donde estos pagos fueron a supuestamente periodistas independientes en Miami, los mismos periodistas que cubrieron el caso de una manera muy perjudicial en contra de los cinco cubanos que hoy están en cinco prisiones de los Estados Unidos. Y nuestras investigaciones empezaron en enero 2009. En estos 18 meses hemos colectado bastante prueba de que periodismo supuestamente independiente estaba perjuiciando a estos hombres por más de 26 meses antes de que el juicio comenzó. Y entonces esta propaganda fue por los pagos de Radio y Telemartí y las oficinas que manejan a esas emisoras, la Oficina de Transmisiones hacia Cuba y la Mesa Directiva de Gobernadores de Transmisiones de los Estados Unidos. Y yo quiero apuntar que Hillary Clinton, como secretaria de Estado, es parte de esa mesa directiva. Entonces, esto es bajo el mando del Departamento de Estado. Y ese papel del gobierno, pagando a periodistas secretamente en Miami, que estaban cubriendo el caso de los cinco, mientras que el gobierno estaba encauzando a los cinco cubanos, es prueba de la necesidad de la inmediata libertad de los cinco, o por un acto del presidente Obama o por un acto de el fiscal general Eric Holder. Y hoy empezamos una campaña con grupos, gremios de abogados, coaliciones de justicia, individuales y personalidades para exigir que el gobierno actúe a revocar las condenas. Pues hay una ley que existe en los Estados Unidos, el Smith-Mundt, que prohíbe que cualquier de estas emisoras de propaganda, son considerados oficialmente propaganda, es prohibido para ellos influenciar domésticamente con transmisiones dentro de la frontera de los Estados Unidos. Sin embargo, haber pagado a periodistas en Miami mientras que estaban, you know, dirigiendo sus noticias al público de Miami era claramente y evidentemente ilegal. Y no solo eso, el mundo reconoce que Radio y Telemartí no llegan a la audiencia en Cuba. Casi nadie escucha ni ve a esas dos emisoras. Entonces, la audiencia real y el blanco de esas transmisiones y propaganda es el mismo público de Miami.
Radio Havana, Cuba.
Yes, can you
please? Go ahead with your question.
Okay, the evidence you have just revealed today further corroborates what Cuba has said all along, that Miami should have never been the venue of that trial, and that the process against the five Cuban anti-terrorists was not a judicial process, but a politically motivated one. But the five men were tried, convicted, and sentenced for who they are and what they represent rather than what they did. So in the case of Gerardo Hernandez, he is serving two life terms plus 15 years, convicted of charges that were never proven. The U.S. government themselves admitted that they could not present any evidence to prove Gerardo's guilt. Now that June 14th is approaching, and as we all know, on that day, the defense team of Gerardo will issue a writ of habeas corpus in his favor. I presume Gerardo's defense will use this new evidence you revealed today. So my question is, what's the procedure now? What can we expect regarding Gerardo's case and the lawsuit against the BBG?
there are two different legal avenues going on. One, as we said before, is we are not attorneys for the Cuban Five. They are represented by very excellent counsel who are fighting for their freedom in the courts and through that justice process. And they will be making determinations about each step and the next steps as that case proceeds. For us, what we are doing here at the Partnership for Civil Justice, working along with the National Committee to Free the Cuban Five and the National Lawyers Guild and the Answer Coalition, and many other groups and organizations throughout the United States, is making a demand on the Justice Department and on Eric Holder that based on the misconduct of the government, on the covert operation that is now being uncovered and revealed, that was taking place during the trial of the Cuban Five, that would have infected the jury pool, that would have deprived them of a constitutional right to a fair trial, Sixth Amendment right, that the Cuban Five must be freed. Their prosecution and their conviction cannot stand based on the impropriety of the U.S. government's actions. And in litigation by the Partnership for Civil Justice, we are in federal district, in U.S. federal court for the District of Columbia, demanding that the government release the records, release the information. They have put forward no lawful basis to withhold this information from the American public. We want the contracts. We want the underlying documents. It is time for this covert operation to be fully and completely revealed to the U.S. population so that we can understand what the U.S. government has been doing, what its operations were, the money that's been paid to Miami, and for what purposes, and to whom, and the full amounts of time. And as we said earlier, the other issue that's going on is that the U.S. government is engaged through the Office of Cuba Broadcasting in ongoing domestic propaganda in the United States, in Miami. We have documentation that shows payments as recently as 2008 to supposedly independent journalists. This operation must end.
Yes, we have on the internet, you see there in the notebook, the listing of the dates. We have, and we'll have on the internet very soon today, the same information plus the listing of the contract numbers. The only thing that's not in the notebook is the contract numbers. This was to make it more easy to read for the press.
We are disclosing to the public all documents that we're receiving throughout this process. So up on the freethefive.org website, on the justiceonline.org website, documents are up there and will be being put up there as we get them. We have spreadsheets from the U.S. government that show names and contracts and dates and amounts of money that were paid. But it says underlying contracts that they are refusing to hand over to us right now, as well as broader requests for information about other journalists who apparently appear to be on the payroll but are still operating covertly. Well, a rogue organization would suggest an agency or an entity in the United States that was operating outside the confines of the U.S. government's desires or wishes. I think here you have an agency that is absolutely operating within the directives of the U.S. government's policy decisions and determinations with regard to both the case of the Cuban Five and relations between the people of the United States and the people of Cuba. And that's the illegality of the domestic propaganda issue, is that the people of the United States should have the right to fully understand and know Cuba and the Cuban people, as well as the case of the Cuban Five, based on the truth, based on real evidence or lack of evidence, but not based on the U.S. government planting false and incendiary stories to tell the people something that is false, both about the Cuban people and about the Cuban Five. And when the BBG and the Office of Cuba Broadcasting are operating the way they're operating, they would appear to have been following the U.S. government policy dictates. Now, I think there are real issues that are being raised about the tens of millions of dollars every year that are being funneled into Miami and the lack of accountability as to where that money is going, who it's going to. But those are additional issues that you know really call into question the propriety of those operations overall.
We will take a question from the telephone audience.
Maggie, you can go ahead with your question.
Okay. This is another question that's more for the legal side than for the specifics of the FOIA issue, but still I think it's pertinent. Have you, any of you, I guess specifically Heidi in this case, taken into account, or are you planning on taking into account that Adriana Perez O'Connor, Gerardo Hernandez's wife, has been consecutively prohibited from visiting her husband, Gerardo Hernandez, in jail in California for the tenure of his time there so far, as has been the case of Olga Salanueva, René Gonzalez's wife. In this case, René is a U.S. citizen, and Gerardo is the case that is really the most complicated of the five in this particular instance. But what I'm wondering is, what procedures, what steps can be further taken to somehow enable that these two women be allowed to see their husbands, and in turn that the husbands be allowed to see their wives?
You've precisely outlined parts, characteristics of what makes this such a truly political case. The sort of tangential issues like denying visas, denying the right to visit with one's family who's been wrongly incarcerated, adds just another dimension to this, where public knowledge, I think the more the public knows that this is happening, the more we conduct concerted public education campaigns around the country to apply pressure to the government to allow visits, is what we need to do on a number of levels, which is why I think this current campaign, which outlines the illegality, we knew there was an unfair trial. We knew the venue was not an impartial one in Miami, and yet time and time again, the government has prevailed at different cases, at different stages in this case, except for the 2005 three-panel reversal, which was the right thing to do. But it's 100% of a political case, and that's why we need to really tell people about this current development, and now that we know how early it occurred, and really mobilize as many thousands of people as we can around the country, because we can fight in the courts, which the lawyers are trying to do and which the Partnership for Civil Justice is now doing, but without a broad-based education movement in the streets, we're not going to be successful.
And I might add that there have been thousands and thousands of postcards, letters, appeals to first President Bush and then President Obama for the two wives, Olga Salanueva and Adriana Perez, to be able to enter the United States. There have been hundreds of well-known people and organizations that have called for them to be able to enter. And what the U.S. government is saying in the case of Adriana is that if they were able to keep Gerardo Hernandez in prison for life, because in federal prison you only get out with a life sentence when you die, and she's denied permanently from entering the U.S., they're saying that this couple is banned from ever seeing each other again, and they've already not seen each other for more than 12 years. And this is cruelty. This is intended to be cruel punishment to the men and their families.
I'll give you a short answer on it. What you have a notebook that details some of the research information. What you've got is a combined thing. They won't give us the bank statements, they won't give us the contracts, they won't give us that information. They're going to have to give it to us, because by law, they can't hide this material from the U.S. public. That's what we're in court fighting for. What we were able to obtain were basic detailed spreadsheet amounts that show names, dates, contracts, even contract numbers showing, I mean, that they exist, but not the underlying contract, and amounts paid. That information is detailed in the notebooks that are being handed out and are being put up on the website. It has new information also going back to, in terms of dates of payments, new journalists who have never been identified before as being on the government payroll. In addition, what you have in there that's extremely helpful based on extensive research is showing the articles that were being published at the moment that people were depositing their bank accounts payments from the U.S. government, and that's also in there.